Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome back. It's another episode of Fistful of Collars, and a very special one because... Very special, because we have a VIP. None other than...
Good to be here, guys.
Get the hell out of here. Not that guy.
Oh my God, stop it.
Well, no, hey, three-time world champion. And, wait there a sec, Brazilian national champion, European champion, Pan-American champion, World Masters champion. That's a lot of gold medals. Claudia Duval is here in the studio with us.
That I'm old.
Oh yeah, we leave the Masters one off, right? So, but that's a lot of gold medals in a short space of time. 3 years. That's a hell of a resume.
Yeah, I'm actually like surprised, like because I have the, I started training really late, so like I'm really proud of whatever results I get. And being able like to win worlds like 3 years in a row, I'm super proud of that. Even like, you know, starting late, like, because
how late is late? Sorry, how old is? How old
I was 21 when I started, and there's many girls that they're competing now as black belts at 21, and that's the age I started training. So like
that is crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm quite proud of myself.
And number one ranked IBJJF as well, right?
Yes.
Which season was that?
This last season, 2018-2019. And I also got Nogi first place for last year, 2018.
Wow. Chasing that ranking isn't easy, right? You're on the road like every weekend, basically?
Yeah, so like you gotta, because the IBJJF does like however many tournaments you do, you get points. So like I've been chasing the tournaments, so it's pretty much every weekend with a different tournament.
Yeah, you flew in even from now, just from New York, right? And you're in Connecticut. When was the last time you were home?
I was home for about 2 months in April and May. April and May.
But home is Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, Rio. But even in Brazil, I traveled a little bit. I had some tournaments.
We actually have a clip playing right now. You can see that this is the final from Worlds
2019.
Yeah, this year.
There you go. That was a crazy submission, right?
Yeah, that's in my face. I swear I looked cute because I was trying to smile, but I was crying at the same time, so it just looks creepy.
What's that emotion like? You know, not everybody gets to win a world championship. Obviously, you got some big emotions on display right there. What was that moment like for you?
Yeah, because so I had this thing where like I'm old. I know I'm not super old, but I still like every time like I remember my first words are like, this is my only chance. I'm never gonna be able to do this again because I'm old, and like I always have this feeling or like I'm old. I'll never have another chance. And this was one of those moments. Like I was feeling like that before, you know, the tournament was like, I'm never doing this again. This is my last chance. I really want to do this. And like when I won, I was just like so happy that it happened. So that was why the creepy smile.
You're kind of doubting yourself going into it.
It's kind of doubting, but like I don't, still to this day, I don't like the feeling before a tournament. Like
you get nervous, right?
Super nervous. Like every time I get there, I want to go home immediately. Like I don't want to be there. Like but I keep signing up for the tournament.
Like every weekend.
Every time there's a new tournament, they go, oh, let's sign up. And then like
dichotomy there. You hate it, but you can't stop going to it.
And then like, the second I get there, like, why do I keep doing this to myself? And so like I don't like the feeling, like, but I've been trying to deal with this, like I've been trying to accept, like there's one thing I always tell myself, like it's fine when you lose, like it's not it's never done. All the greatest names, that everybody has a loss, and like it doesn't make them any less. Like one of like my good friends, like I admire, like Bruno, he lost, is it, but doesn't make him any less of, he is still
Bruno
10-time world
Malfacini.
Right, he's right. still 10-time world champion. He's still like the one of the greatest ever. So, like, and this, like, I always like take that as example, like people that I admire, like they lose and it's fine. It's, people are not going to be hating you. If they did, they already did before. So.
it is true, right?
It's fine.
There is like nobody is undefeated in
Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah,
nobody. Right? And so it happens to everybody. And like, I don't know if I have this fear on my head, like, oh, if I lose, I'm not going to be able to teach seminars anymore. Because that's how my dad kind of thinks. I don't know if he's watching. I told him this. I love you, Dad.
Shout out.
But he is like, every time I lose a tournament, he calls me right away. He's like, can you still teach seminars?
It's a lot of pressure from Dad coming down.
I don't think he understands it. Like, it's fine. It's okay. Like, he's like, is anybody going to your seminar? Like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it's okay to lose. And I...
Still a 3-time world champion. Yes. Can't take those wins away, right?
Yeah.
And you're, like, putting yourself out there, even if you end up with a loss, like, even if you have, like, 2-3 great matches, you're still putting your name out there. Like, if you have one great match, like, you still, like, have a video to show, like, somebody, like, might, you know, see your final. So you're still putting your name out there, even if you don't come out with the girl. So that's something, like, I know it, but I'm just trying, like, to work with that, because, like, I know I'm not invincible. I don't have any, like, idea that I am, but nobody likes losing, and, like, this is a feeling that I'm trying, like, to deal with myself. Like, it's okay to lose. You gotta accept that it happens, and
it's tough, right? Go ahead.
No, I was just curious. I want to bring it back a little bit. You said you started at 21. When did you start competing seriously and thinking, man, I could be great at this. I could be a world champion maybe.
So I used to do judo before jiu-jitsu. I did judo for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I competed a little bit in judo. Same thing. I hated being there. I was there. I wanted to go back home. And then when I transitioned to jiu-jitsu, I competed 3 times as a white belt, 1 time in the blue belt maybe. And then all the feeling, I don't want to be here, I want to go back home. So I didn't compete for like 5 years again after that.
Wow.
And then like, so my first like introduction back to the scene, it was have a friend back in Brazil, you know, Oscar, the Niyachi. Mm-hmm. He has the dojo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the confetti. So he had like a matched thing. So in my first fight was Sayani.
Okay.
Fidu. We're really good friends.
Welcome back.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, welcome back.
It was a really crazy way of competing as well, because it wasn't a tournament, right?
Yeah.
It was like, it was just a room. Then they had like a bunch of cameras, and they had like a table with I think maybe 3 or 4 people, like Roger Gracie and some big names.
Yeah, on the first one, wow. Roger wasn't there. He was there on the, because I did this discernment a couple of times, but the first one Roger wasn't there. But like they had like about 3 people sitting on the table, a coach on each side,
and that's it. No
cameras,
no fans, no crowd, really quiet. It was intense.
But the
right?
feeling is the same. Like the nervous, it was the same.
That'd be more.
Yeah, it was.
Everybody's watching you.
Yeah, so like you don't see the people seeing you. Like they're seeing it like from the
But it was a really interesting kind of concept. It was just like a real face off, like a challenge match between 2 people. So, but I guess it worked out because you competed in that a few times, and then I remember you started competing in like the Abu Dhabi Grand Slam tournaments.
That was my
IBJJF.
First tournament. Right after the dojo, the
what belt were you at this point?
Brown belt.
Brown belt.
So me and Tanya were brown belts. So after that, I did the Abu Dhabi. It was 2015 Abu Dhabi Grand Slam, and like I remember my first match. I fought. I was a brown belt, but I fought a black belt, and like I won. But I was so proud of myself. I was like, oh my god! Like, but. It was good. Like still every time the nervous feeling, but I started like going for it, and then so 2015 I think I only did the Grand Slam and the dojo, but then I did the Europeans 2016 as a brown belt. So that's when I started doing the like all the tournaments.
And I remember that year, the 2016 like the generation of the brown belt athletes that year was, I think, maybe the best we've ever had.
Everybody who was the
right?
world champion, like right the next year, 2017, we had five world champions that were brown belt the year before. So it was Talita, Ana Carolina Vieira, Nachi, me, and Tayanis.
Right.
So I was in the worst brown belt bracket.
It was amazing because you were all competing together like that year, fighting each other in the absolutes, and then you all kind of graduated to black belt at the same time. You got promoted just after 2016 Worlds,
yeah,
right?
No. So I think Nacieli, Tajani, they all got their
on the podium.
Yeah,
right?
On the podium. But I only got my black belt at the end of 2016.
Oh, okay. And that's from De La Hiva,
De La Hiva,
yeah. I say we should mention that you guys go way back. You guys have trained together for a while.
We've known each other for a while.
I remember in 2015 talking to you and being like, dude, we got this brown belt girl at our gym. She doesn't compete a lot, but she just tunes me up all the time. She just beats me up all the time.
That's exactly what he said.
It's true. I always used to say that you were the second toughest person in the gym, right?
Who was the toughest?
Mourinho.
Oh, yeah.
She knows who I mean. Mourinho. Like,
he's a big guy that crushes
people. My shoulder
people.
Has been 3 years and a half remembering him.
But explain, like, Mourinho, what is he? Like, 110 kilos, fourth degree black belt, black belt lucha libre, like, used to train with Minotauro MMA.
He used to compete a lot. I think he fought Salo, Cyborg, a bunch of people. But then, like, family happened, two kids, and then, like, he kind of, like, pushed out of the competition scene. But, like, he would have done great. Like, he did. Like, he competed nationals, I think worlds, back when he was still in Brazil. He had some really good results.
But, like, a long time ago, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah. He was so tough.
Yeah.
So, like, after him, you I always used to say that you were the next toughest person in the gym. Because, I mean, De La Hiva was kind of lucky, right? Because right there in the middle of Copacabana in Rio de Janeiro, it's a famous area. A lot of tourists come to visit. And De La Hiva, the name as well. Everybody knows De La Hiva. Even if you don't know the man too well,
yeah, a lot
you
of people
know
don't
name.
Know that he's a guy. Like, I know that De La Hiva was like, what? Isn't that the technique? Like, no, it's a guy.
But you used to, I mean, you still do, right? The academy receives a lot of visitors. Mm. So, you know, you used to train with people all the time that you never met before.
Yeah.
It's almost a little bit like a competition then, right?
Yeah, the difference, like, because on the competition we have the mental, the nervous, so, like, it's different. But, like, you get to train with a lot of different people, so that's really good. Like.
But when did you figure out then that, okay, you know, this competition stuff is it's going pretty well, you know? Maybe I should focus more on this. Because, like you say, you spent 5 years with no competition whatsoever. And then, like, you did a couple at brown belt, and you're like, okay, that's what I'm doing now. And since then, like, 3-4 years, that's all you've been doing.
Jumped in head first after that.
Yeah, so I was studying engineering for a while. So, like, I had in my head, though, because I knew I needed money. I needed a job. So my dad is an engineer. So I was like, he wanted me to be a doctor, to go to medical school. But, like, no, you got to really love that stuff. You can't, like, just, oh. I mean, and so, like, I was like, okay, I like math. I like physics. You know, so I'm going to be trying engineering. So I did that. So I went, like, halfway through with engineering. And I liked the subject and stuff, but every time that I was there, I was thinking, like, I could be training. Like,
yeah.
All the time. So, like, and then I went, like, through, like, a bad phase of, like, of my life. Like, I had depression and stuff. So, like, I stopped studying. Like, I was still training, but, like, I couldn't bring myself to go back to school. So I went, like, for that period, thinking maybe, like, 6 months, a whole year, where, like, I didn't know what I was going to do. Because, like, I couldn't bring myself to go to university anymore. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't.
Were you unhappy because you were studying is something you didn't really want to do?
No, I don't know if it was something in particular that happened, but, like, I think a bunch of stuff was happening at the same time. So I had, like, a very bad moment. Like, I couldn't bring myself to go to school. Like, I wasn't competing yet a lot. So I was kind of freaking out. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna do, because I know I need money. Like, I need to be able to feed myself. But then I started competing, and then, like, I remember I won Worlds at brown belt that same year, 2016, and I was like, okay, maybe that's something that I can do. Like that's something like maybe that's gonna. Maybe I know a little bit. Yeah, and then it was only by 2017 that I started like to realize, oh, I can actually like make a living out of this. Like, started getting sponsors and everything. So
because that's also the hardest part, right? It's like winning medals. If you're good at jiu-jitsu, winning medals is not that hard.
What you train to do.
It's you do. Yeah. But even gold medals, you know, people who win a lot of gold medals, even they struggle to live as a professional, right? That's something that you feel that you've managed to figure out?
Yeah, so like, because I don't get to be a full-time athlete because like I can't survive out of being a full-time athlete. Like the sponsor, so like I have a new sponsor now, a new gi sponsor is Okami's from, I don't know if they're from Germany, but it's somewhere in Europe. And in like they pay me, but like it's not a money that I can live off through the whole month. Even like the competitions that give money, like they started, like IBJJF started doing that with Brazilian Nationals and Worlds, hopefully with Pan Ams and everything else, but it's not something that's gonna last for long. Even like the whole ranking, I had to go to so many tournaments for that first ranking that it basically just pays itself out. So it's not like, so you really, like, if you want to make money, you got to be able to teach classes, teach privates, like teach camps. I have like rash guards that I sell, everything. So you got to be able to have something outside of it. There's very few people that get to live just as an athlete, but it's very hard.
And if you do, then you usually just have like a sponsor or even somebody giving you like a salary so that all you do is you just train.
Yeah, right? There are some gyms that I know they do this, like they get a person, like the person teaches there and stuff, like they give housing, food and stuff, and then you teach here. But like it's not very common. Like I know a few people, but most people they have like to struggle a lot. Like in Brazil I see so many people, you know, selling stuff at the red lights and on the street, like doing the
raffles.
The raffles, yeah. Like, oh, this gi, like, so every name is like 10 reais, 20 reais, and they're like, they're always like struggling so much.
It's a hustle, right?
Yeah, it is. It's
but
not.
Actually, can you explain that about the red lights? Because you mentioned you spotted an athlete who had a great story recently, right? About
Roosevelt. Or
yes, I know him.
Yeah. And I saw
Roosevelt Souza, I think his name is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's been picked up by Homelo and Everyday Pojada because he was out there selling water bottles during Carnival.
Yeah, his story went viral, and on the internet, everybody started posting. So he was selling the.
Yeah, he was out there just hustling, you know, it was hot, and everyone else was partying, and he's out there selling water bottles, trying to, I think, get a ticket to World Pro, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the timing's right on that, but it really caught on, you know. Now, you know, he got very lucky because Homelo noticed, and I think has helped him with his accommodations, and I see him training at Cyborgs now on Instagram, so.
That's amazing. But Roosevelt, we should say, he is an absolute killer as well. Roosevelt Souza, for those who don't know, is that he's a ultra-heavyweight brown belt who just kind of broke onto the scene, like, this year, and had an amazing performance. I think he took double gold at American Nationals just recently. Submissions, like just firing, tapped out a bunch of guys. And but it's amazing that's the reality for a lot of athletes, right? Is that if you don't have like a good family who can support you, if you don't have the sponsor bringing you to the gym, then a lot of these guys, it's really not easy to make it as a professional.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of people are lucky, like they have the family like backing them up. And nowadays it's a lot about like the social medias, like you might not even be as good, but you have a lot of following through the social media. So I really like try and like work them well, like always on my Instagram, like always posting, always like something new, because I know people appreciate it. So like you gotta be working through your social media, because you can be like super good, you can win a bunch of medals, but like if you don't post about it, if you don't say anything, people are not gonna say very like hardly they're gonna say something for you. So you gotta put yourself out there so people see you and then they talk about
you. The marketing, right? It's like building your brand.
Great advice, I feel like, for a lot of jiu-jitsu competitors out there. And like Hal said, like it really is you gotta hustle for it, but like, you know, it's kind of
a small business, like
you're kind of proof that you can make it work, right?
Yeah, you gotta put yourself out there. And like, it's funny because my dad if he's watching. Yeah, like he'll have serious conversations with me about my followers. He's like, you kind of got stuck at this number of followers. What's happening? And I'm like, well, that after a while, it only shows like every thousand. So you
get harder and harder.
Like, I promise you, it's going up. So people, please follow me. So my dad,
Throw my dad a bone.
So my dad is proud of me.
That's funny. Awesome. We'll put a link to your Instagram profile in the comments here as well, so you can follow.
Yeah, but it is true to a certain point. Like you gotta put yourself out there through the social medias. Like you gotta make yourself seen so that people can see you. Mm.
Have you you've been doing it for a few years now? Have you learned any like things that work? Like what would you tell someone just starting out? Maybe they've won a brown belt world title and like, okay, I need to make myself a little bit more famous, you know, what should they do on Instagram? What works for you?
So like what I do, like I try and post like at least once a day. Mm. And because I also watch like where are my followers from. So most of my followers are from Brazil. So I try and post it at a time that people in Brazil are already up. Because like if you have a business profile on Instagram, it shows you the time that people are most active, like your followers. So like, and I have like about, I think maybe 16% out of the U.S. So I also 16% out of here of the U.S. So I try and look for a time that people are going to be up here and also up in Brazil. So like I try to look for that time. So I always post stuff like this. I try and be funny.
You have good memes. I can vouch for that. Lots of cat memes.
Yeah. Like, I love cats.
She loves cats.
Yeah, I try, I don't like, you know, saying anything that might offend people. Like, so I never have comments, you know, like, this is going to be good for this person, but like this person's not going to like it. So I don't say things that, you know, might
controversial.
Yeah.
Stay positive, right?
Yeah, because I know that talking a lot is going to bring you a lot of viewers. Like, for example, like Gordon, he talks, but he does. He does everything he says he's going to. So, so that helps. But talking brings a lot of attention to yourself. And I realize that not many girls do that. I don't remember seeing any girls like talking, you know.
Talking about the others,
yeah,
like
talking
calling
like,
them
oh,
out
yeah,
and stuff.
I can't wait to fight you. Like,
I'm
gonna
beat
you up. Like,
yeah.
So like, you don't see that happening.
The only person I can really think of who like is kind of controversial in her posts and stuff is Gabby Garcia.
Oh no, yeah, but that's a whole separate, because Yasha does the MMA and the MMA people.
It's a different style, right? Yeah,
yeah. So like, it was the Ronda Rousey. She brought so much attention to herself because she started like talking,
being a little mean.
Yeah, I was happy when she got knocked.
Oh.
Now I used like to be a huge fan because I did judo before that, so like I was watching her fight, saying like, "Yay, Ronda!" But then she started saying stuff like, "I can beat any grappling jujitsu girl, like gi or no gi." Like, no, you can't. Yeah, she started like just everybody. Like, I can beat everybody, like with my hand ties around my back.
She could
like
beat Mayweather too. I don't know.
Yeah, she said something. Like, I was like, "No, you can't." Like, but like that brought so much attention to herself. Like, it's
true.
And that we have. Like a while ago, like Chael Sonnen, he was also like doing like saying, so I was so mad.
I mean, he is undefeated though,
yeah.
So
yeah, so he
is. Chael's undefeated though.
But yeah, talking crap is not your style, right?
Yeah, no, I don't like doing that stuff. Like, and I see a lot of the guys, they do that, like they talk a lot, that brings attention to them, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a bad way, but.
Always
bringing
attention.
Yeah, bringing attention to yourself is good, might be bad, but like you gotta know how to do it. So like that's something that I don't see girls doing, and the guys do. So like I never have like a
you
strong.
You could be the first then.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
What's up, Gordon? Let's fight.
There it is.
No, start, please.
You heard it here first.
Starting it off on
Fisher
College. Book it. You don't want this problem.
Set the fight to win. Just like, all right, I got it.
Yeah, though Seth, he's like crazy about like having one of the girls fight him. He's always like, I'm going to fight one of the girls like, just for a match.
Oh, Seth.
Yeah, but I see like sometimes girls like they have a strong opinion. Like I've seen comments, you know, like so like a girl wins and then her friend says like no, a girl loses and then her friend goes and say, oh no, you didn't win, but you are the best. The other girl's not. So they talk like specifically about somebody like publicly. I I don't like doing that. If I have nothing to say, I'm not going to say anything because I don't like this. You know, there's this tension. I want people to like me, so I don't like saying. Yeah, but people hate me anyway. So even though I didn't ever did anything, yeah.
Really, you think you have?
No, haters? I know for sure of people that hate me, and I never done anything to them.
Are you talking about fans or athletes or
Instagram commenters?
Some athletes, some Instagram people, like they go and comment like. The other day, I tried making a joke on my. I don't care. Yeah. The other day, I tried making a joke on my page. So, like, I had a picture of me, like, kind of like looking like this, and then like the subtitle was like, "When you see a white belt teaching another white belt to move," and then, oh my god, that
did
got
people
so.
Get mad?
And then I'm like, "What if it's a judo black belt? Oh, what if they're a wrestling guy? That's so unnecessary. What's wrong?" Like.
Yeah, I will say people are a little bit soft in jiu-jitsu. What do you think?
No, because like most of the time that you see a white belt teaching the other white belt is not a judo black belt. It's not a white belt world champion. It's going to be like, oh, let me show you this burning ball I just saw on YouTube the other day. That's like most. So I was trying to make a joke and people like got so mad. But I know for sure of some people that don't like me, some people I fight against. But like I know I never like insulted her or did anything, but you can't please people, like, and
you can't be friends with everybody, right?
Yeah, I try to be friends with people, but like if I know for sure like they don't, I don't try and convince anybody to be my friend. Like if you want to be my friend, I'll be your friend, but
let me ask you this, like, what's it like to fight your friends? Because you guys,
I
you know,
hate it so much.
Well, there you go. So maybe these guys
need that, right?
They need to feel that way, because if they are friends, maybe they wouldn't fight against you as well as they could. Yeah.
Yeah, so like there's a couple of people that I don't fight ever. So like Tayani, we fought a few times at the brown belt, but then we became really good friends, so like we don't fight anymore. It's mostly my choice, like, Tayani, don't beat me up. Yeah, but I'm also good friends with Monique Ricardo from Dallas, and then like we met at a few tournaments in
different.
Yeah, no, a different Monique.
Yeah,
just
we're going to play a
clip but a different
soon,
Monique.
So.
Yeah, yes,
but we met a few times in some tournaments and we always close out. Like, I can't, like, we're really good friends. Like, it's really hard. I feel like men, they have an easier time fighting their friends. They're just like, let's do it. Fight is over. They hug each other. It's awesome. But, like,
you have a different relationship, right?
Yeah.
And there's so many, there's just less girls. Like, true. I feel like it'd be hard to fight your friend over and over and over again.
All the time.
Yeah.
But the women's jiu-jitsu has definitely grown a lot in the last couple of years, right? I mean, we have, you know, multiple articles on our website sort of, you know, studying the growth and the numbers and the number of people who actually are, you know, participating in the tournaments. But
we're actually playing the 2018 final.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right now,
this is the final against Monique Elias from Alliance. But the growth of jiu-jitsu, Claudia, I'd really like to get your kind of feelings on how women's jiu-jitsu has changed since you started and, you know, the last couple of years as a black belt, the difference that you've seen.
Yeah, I've seen so many more girls because I remember the first ever jiu-jitsu tournament I signed up for. I didn't have any girls.
Nobody.
In my category.
Wow,
yeah.
You're the only one.
Yeah. They had other white belts, but I don't think they had absolute. And then I couldn't change it at the time. So like I got there and there was nobody. And I don't think you see that anymore. You don't see a bracket with like no girls on the white. And you see sometimes some like even on the opens, like blue belts, you see like sometimes 15 girls in one category. That's something like it didn't happen like when I just started.
How about at your seminars? Because you teach seminars, so many of them, all over the world. Do you find that a lot of girls are coming to your seminars?
In the U.S., yes, I see a bunch more girls. In Europe, jiu-jitsu is still growing, so sometimes they have a bunch of girls, sometimes not.
It depends on which country, right? Some countries are more established than others.
Yeah, so like for example, London has a pretty good jiu-jitsu, so like they have a bunch of girls out there. So like, Italy, not that many girls, but like a lot of countries, but it's still growing because I feel like the hardest part of like jiu-jitsu is like is bringing the person to the gym, especially the women. But once they're out there, they're like, I love this, I want to do this. But until then, it's hard to bring bring them in, especially if there's no girls on the mat, they're gonna look at us like, mm-mm, no, yeah. Not gonna do it. But if they walk by, they see one girl, they're like, oh, there's a girl. So maybe if they see five girls, like, whoa, there's a bunch of girls, so that's something I can do. So that's the hardest part, convincing them that it's
walk through the door, yeah, for the first time.
Do you find that you, when you do your seminars and stuff, that is there any difference being a woman teaching seminars to men? You know, do they maybe they want to learn from you, or they don't want to learn from you because of who you are? Or do you find you have more women come into your seminars because, you know, you have an established name as a black belt world champion?
Yeah, a lot of girls, like, especially the young ones, like, they're like, oh, I watch all your matches, like, I'm a huge fan, like, that's still to this day so amazing.
That's
to
cool.
me. But, like, I see, like, a lot of men, like, coming and wanting to learn, and that, like, I feel so, like, you know, great, like, because it is, like, a male-dominant sport, there's more men, and, like, it's still, like, there's a lot of sexism out there, so there's still, like, a bunch of men, like, I don't want to learn for a girl, but, like, I've had, like, lots of great experience, like, where guys, like, they come to my seminar, like, they really want to learn. They're like, oh, the stuff you show is amazing. So I really feel like...
They must like your jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's like, I really like that part. It's really good.
Speaking of your jiu-jitsu, how would you describe your jiu-jitsu?
I have a lot of flaws. A lot of flaws. But I have like five stuff that I do well, and so far I've been able to like to do my game, like because I use, like, because, you know, at the La Hiva we start inside the guard.
Yeah, this is interesting, right? The way that the training is set up. I think because we used to train in kind of a small area, you know, yeah, a small room, so for like safety and stuff, that we would always start training with one person in close guard.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, you would kind of go, okay, I'm going to start on bottom, I start on top, and then you close the guard, go. That's how every round would start. So a yeah. little bit different to some gyms, right?
Yeah, very mm. different. And I would always want to play on top. Always, always. So I don't think I even knew how to do guard until, like, the beginning of my brown belt.
Crazy.
and then I hurt my shoulder pretty badly by the beginning of 2016. And then after that, like, it hurt me to be on top. So I had to start doing guard. So that's when, like, I developed, like, a bunch of stuff. Mm. Like, I learned a lot from watching. Like, even, like, watching Master De La Hiva. Like, stuff that he wasn't even showing, but, like, I was seeing him do it. So, and I learned, like, a lot from watching. And then I started doing guard. So, and now I feel much safer on the bottom.
What other athletes did you like to watch in the past, coming up, and also now? Who are you watching?
Actually, like, before I started competing, I never followed the competition scene, mm-hmm. so I didn't know who anybody was. Like, I never knew anybody, so, like, I didn't really watch, you know, like, the tournaments and anything. But then I'd watch a lot of people in my gym, like, people training. So, like, watch what they do, and then all the stuff that I liked, I tried copying it.
That's great. Yeah, I actually hear that quite a bit. I think it's interesting that there are so many people that just train and don't really have any interest in competition. Have you found that to be true even at your seminars? Like, people just, they know you're coming when they just kind of know that you've won a world championship or something, but they don't really know. What?
Yeah, this happens a lot. Like, even some seminars that I teach, like, because I reach out to people, like, hey, I'm going to be in the area, like, I'm looking to go to the area. Would you like to have me at your gym? Some people, like, they told me, like, I didn't even know who you were until you reached out to me, and then I checked it. I was like, oh, wow, she won.
Oh, she's really good.
Oh. You wear the shirt that you're wearing around?
My douchebag shirt?
Just in case people don't know, but you can see what it says. Not too many people have these shirts, right? You have to earn that shirt.
Don't just give out those shirts.
Yeah. That's the only reason I go to the Worlds the day before, just so I can get my douchebag shirt.
But the people then, that maybe they research you and they're like, oh, wow, she's really good. So,
yeah, so I have that happen a lot. Like, and some people, like, they come up to me, like, I didn't even know who you were until, like, I saw the flyer for your seminar, like, and then, like, I researched it, I saw it. So this happens a lot. There's a lot of people who don't follow, You know, the tournaments don't follow jiu-jitsu.
And then when they get you into the academy for these seminars or when you visit the different places to teach, what are they asking to see? Like, you know, what do they want to see? If they researched your game and they watched you, your matches on floor grappling.
Yeah. On floor grappling.
We just saw the last one, right? You had the triangle and the wrist lock, which is a brutal finish. Yeah. But
don't show that, please. I don't want to. Don't show that to anybody.
What happens a lot is, like, a lot of people, because they know I'm a student of De La Riva, they're like, can we see the De La Riva? I'm like, well, you can bring De La Riva in for that. Right. He's going to charge a lot of money, but you can bring him in for that, because, like, I don't work a lot with the De La Riva, because you know that De La Riva doesn't show us a lot. He keeps his secrets.
No, this is actually true, yeah, because, you know, we both trained there for a long time, both got our black belts in that gym. And I always say to people that I can count the amount of times I saw De La Riva teaching the De La Riva guard on one hand. But if I ever went to him with a question, he would always answer. He would always help me. So I would go to him and I'd be like, I'm trying this and I don't really, it's not working. And he'd give me some solutions and then let me try. But in the class, he's teaching everything else. He's teaching guard passing. He's teaching side control. He's teaching chokes from the back, you know,
jiu-jitsu. But wrist locks and knee bars, he never...
He doesn't teach wrist locks or knee bars.
Knee bars, but like...
So where'd you learn that? I'm confused.
The internet.
The internet. At the bad people club. Yeah, so I saw him one time. He was showing, like, the knee bars and the foot locks. Like, this is what you can do. This is what you can't do. That's like all. Like, he never showed, like, oh, we can try this one and then we go for knee bar. He never showed any, like, wrist.
But you say, like, the people want to see De La Riva when you go to the academy?
Yeah,
then?
Some people, they ask me, like, can we see De La Riva? Like, well, I don't work with the De La Riva a lot. So, like, I'm afraid, like, that's not my game. So I only show stuff that I actually do. So, like, I work around the spider guard a lot, the omoplatas, the triangles. Like, it's only, like, this stuff that I.
Do you think people are surprised when you say that you don't really do De La Riva too
much? Yeah, some people, they're like, oh my God, how can it be? How is it possible? But, like, yeah, because I tell them, like, De La Riva, he keeps his secrets. Like, he doesn't show us a lot. Like, he shows, like, you know, basic stuff that works. Like, you know, one time I was like, De La Riva, can you show me the Berimbolo? He's like, I don't know. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. I asked him about the Berimbolo, and he's like, yeah, he's like, I tried it. I didn't like it too much. So, yeah. But he has so much other stuff from that guard. Yeah. It is funny. It's like a joke, right? But it's almost like he really does have stuff from that he doesn't show anybody.
Yeah.
Only he does. And then when he does it, you're like, what is that? And he's kind of like, yeah. There you go. Yeah, not showing you.
And he has, like, I think he keeps a lot of stuff for the seminars. Like, he teaches a lot of seminars. So maybe he keeps, like, the secret, the cool stuff.
But you obviously learned solid fundamental jiu-jitsu training there. So how did you kind of develop the game that you have now? You say you really like spider guard, and we've seen in the videos that we watched today, triangle, you know, omoplata, these kind of techniques. How did you find that was what you what was good for you?
So, like I said, I hurt my shoulder at the beginning of 2016. So, like, I couldn't, like, be on top. Like, it was hurting me too much. So I had to develop more on the guard. And I remember, like, it was one of my teammates was telling me about the spider guard, like, the way you position yourself, where you have your legs stretched to one side and, like, your hips pointing the other side. And so I had one of my teammates, you know, showing me, like, that's how you do it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
So it just, like, made sense?
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I started, like, playing a little bit more of the spider guard that way. And I saw, like, he created openings, like, for the triangle. So I started, like, shooting for a bunch of them. And I don't remember exactly how I started doing omoplatas, because I used to like the triangles more, and then I went for the omoplatas, but I don't really remember how the transition happened.
But actually, thinking back to, you know, training together, I remember that is one technique that De La Riva does show a lot.
He loves
the omoplata.
The omoplata.
Right?
It's actually his favorite position, because people think his favorite position is the De La Riva, but it's actually the omoplata.
And there were a few other guys. And he's really good at it. Like, and there were a few other guys in the gym, like Bruninho, and a few other guys who are just... sort of like masters of the omoplata, right? So
yeah, so
probably just training with those guys, you kind of soaked it up. Yeah,
I don't remember how the transition happened exactly, but then I started doing more the omoplata, and I liked more because I think it's safer than the triangle. Because when they move out of the triangle, sometimes they're already passing your guard.
Right.
Like with the omoplata, you get to follow them up, like ended up on top, get a sweep, and then get the submission.
I like the omoplata as well because with the triangle, especially bigger or stronger guys, they can stack you, and you know, it sucks because you can have the triangle closed and somebody they can sit there and just be tough and
like
not tough.
Like Mourinho,
right?
He feeds you the triangle to pass your guard.
He really did. I watched him do that. Right? I watched him do
all
that
the time.
To
That's
every
the way he passed the guard.
Person.
He feeds you the triangle when people go, look, it's a triangle. It's not a triangle. It's not a triangle. And then he gets you on the amasapon.
Oh, yeah. So it's basically, you know, just that horrible collar.
Yeah, the bread cutter.
The collar and just grind
it.
Yeah,
and as he's passing your guard and you still kind of have a triangle there, he's like...
Yeah.
I consider that a personal attack if someone does that to me. Like, all
right. You've suffered there once or twice.
I have. Not at your hands.
But the omoplata is definitely, it's great because, you know, if it goes wrong, you can just go back to guard or you get the sweep, right?
It's great. You can also come back to a triangle like if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I love the omoplata too, actually. Yeah. Man, I only started playing with the omoplata really after I went to a seminar with Clark Gracie. Because he was like the original omoplata guy, right? and just watching him, the way that, not really like the actual technique of like, you know, I do this with my legs and I grab here, but just watching like how he moved and like how he kind of just flowed from one to the other with the omoplata, it was really inspiring. So
it's a special thing to watch like somebody who's really good at that one position or really good at something, and just to see how they move through those positions, like it's completely different, especially when a guy like Clark, right?
Yeah,
who has like a specific technique.
He literally is a master of that one.
Have you noticed since you've taught people all over the world that people play their games differently based on geography at all? Like,
no, because I feel like a lot of people ask me, like, oh, what do you think about the jiu-jitsu in Europe? What do you think about the jiu-jitsu in Brazil? But I feel like it's becoming kind of one, especially because of the internet now. They have, like, not only the YouTube, but they have, like, the online...
Flow grappling.
Yeah, they can watch matches on flow grappling, but they have the online, you know, like where people like have their own things online, like
the online academies, right?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to do that too because I understand it's complicated, but yeah, one day. But so they have like the online classes and everything, the DVDs. So I feel like it's kind of like, you know, becoming one. You know, people get to see stuff, so they get to try it out, they get to ask their professors, and so many seminars happening everywhere in the world. People get to attend seminars, so it's kind of like, it's not like, oh, people from here do this, people from here do this. Like, obviously, like a little bit, like, oh, the professor likes doing this, so they're gonna do this.
Sure.
So I'm sure, like, Clark's students, they're probably
pretty
good
with
the omoplata, but it's still like, It's different. Like, people like to do, you know.
Would you say the level is kind of catching up to Brazil, or is Brazil still way ahead of everyone?
Here in the U.S., the level is so high because, like, so many schools, people training, like, people taking it seriously. And in Europe, it's starting to grow. Like, you have, like, some people from the U.K., like Fionn. I'm gonna call
her. She's amazing.
I'm gonna call her Fiona, so she gets mad. Fionn, and she had a great year.
She's incredible.
She's been having a great year. So like, you can see that the level in Europe like is getting high. And people
Samantha
from
Cook, another girl you fought multiple times, right?
So a lot of people from all over the world they're catching up. They're training, and I think like it's only gonna grow more and more, and eventually you're gonna have worlds with like world champions, like, you know, from all over the world. Because I was checking, like, the list the other day. On the girls, you have, like, a few girls, like, where's Dominika from?
Oh, she's actually, I mean, she was born in Lithuania, but I mean, she moved to America when she was really young, like I want to say like 8 years old, and she's pretty much American, but she's not an American citizen. She's lived here her whole life, so she's born there, but she's kind of raised in America. So.
Yeah, but like you have her. There's a girl from France,
Claire, I think it is, right? No,
no, it's.
Are you talking like back? Like
no,
back
no, no. Yeah, from the world champions, like the IBJJF world champions. Yeah, there's Penny Thomas from.
Oh, she's American. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
but,
South Africa actually.
South
sorry.
African,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a girl from France. I forgot her name. But yeah, so you have like at least five different countries. I think there's a girl from Sweden too.
Maxine,
Maxine and there's
Grace Umaita. Yeah.
Yeah, there's another one too.
And of course, you have Rikako from Japan.
Yeah, Rikako from Japan.
So there were
so maybe six, seven different countries on the girls, but on the guys, I think you have maybe a couple of Americans. And I feel that like. At some point, we're gonna have people from all over the world.
What's the one place that you've traveled a lot? So, what's the one place that you've been to where you think this country has like real potential in jiu-jitsu, like to maybe produce athletes, to produce champions, or maybe just as like a to just have a big jiu-jitsu scene? Is there anywhere that you've been you think, wow, okay, this is like the next big up-and-coming place?
Yeah, for sure. Here in the U.S., there's like...
Well, we can't say the U.S. because it's huge here. There's so many people have been coming here for 25 years.
The England, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much jiu-jitsu there. Like, it's growing. Like, so many good schools. There, Roger, the Gracie Baja with Lagarto. So there's...
Braulio.
Braulio. I've never been up there to that part, but I've been like around London. Yes, and like people being athletes, like actually taking it seriously, because I've been to some other countries where like people have classes like one day a week, so like they do it like they're not looking to be athletes. But yeah, for sure the UK, like it's right there.
What do you think about the people, the sport versus like martial art aspect? It's a conversation that people have a lot. Like, is jiu-jitsu becoming a sport and losing its martial arts roots, where, you know, more people take it seriously, they go to train, and then they change their whole life around it? Or there's also some casual people out there that do it, you know, 2-3 times a week or less even. What's your take on that?
Nah, there's a lot of people that do it casually. Like, even like at our home school, De La Riva, most of the people there are just...
Yeah, like 95% or more, right? Yeah.
Most people there are just like, they're like business people. They work the whole day, so they just want to go there, relax, get choked out.
Yeah.
And then they leave.
Choke some people out.
Hopefully choke like a couple people out. And then like they leave like with good spirits, like... Because it's kind of like a therapy thing. Right. It's like a lot of people, you know.
Meditation. Yeah, if you train, you know. Yeah.
So for sure, there's like a bunch of people that train just because you know, they want to do a sport. And like I'm one, like everything, because I've tried like a few things as I was like growing up, like volleyball, like even the gym. I hate going to the gym. I only go to take pictures. I do 3 Instagram sets, then I go for bicep, and then I'll do Facebook one. And then, like, I don't like it, but, like, jiu-jitsu is something, like, I love it so much, and it's fun. You lose weight, like, you get muscle, everything you get to jiu-jitsu. So there is a bunch of people that go just for, you know, like, the...
It's good for here too, right?
Yeah,
Thing I think for jiu-jitsu is so important for me.
You
were saying earlier today, right? That you've only rolled what? How many times?
Just a couple times.
In the last six weeks or something?
Yeah, yeah. I've just been nursing an injury as well, and I just trained at our gym yesterday for the first time in a while, and I felt like the thing that I was like missing the most was like learning something new every day, you know? Like, I feel like I really missed, like, learning something new, you know, like that every day. I feel like I was, like, pining for that. So, like, that was the part I missed the most, I feel like.
Man, I find myself, if I don't train jiu-jitsu, you know, at least, like, you know, semi-regularly, if I go a period, like, let's say where I'm injured or I'm busy or I'm sick or something, and I go like a couple of weeks without training, I start going crazy. I really do.
I also find that about you.
I also find that.
But you know, I kind of get like grumpy and I get a little bit more anxious. And
you
just
also find that about him.
Keep going, Hal. Keep going.
He'll just say I'm like that every day. So. But it's true. I definitely notice it affects my mood. And when I go and train jiu-jitsu, you know, I will come out of the gym even on a bad day. Like, even on a gym where I'm like, my technique is bad and I'm getting smashed and I get tapped a bunch of times, I'll come out of there and I'll be like, well, not bad. Okay, that was good. I needed that, you know? So
it's a privilege to get smashed, you know? Like, you're on the mat. That's all that matters.
Yeah, speaking of getting smashed, like, rolling with Cloud Genia is an experience. Because, like,
he's lying.
No. The thing is that you were talking about how much you love your guard and stuff, but you did spend so long, like, years, like, playing just top game, right?
Yeah.
That I think you have a little bit of a different jiu-jitsu game to a lot of modern competitors, right? Because you never pass the guard standing, right?
I don't like to stand up.
Why not?
I'm not sure exactly, because like, I came from judo, so like, when I just started training, I was like, I should be able to stand up, but I never felt comfortable, so I always wanted like to be on my knees. So like, that's one of, like, when I said like I had huge flaws, that's one of my big flaws, is not standing up. So I only like, you know, like start shortening the distance until I pass the guard.
And you know, you really have that, like, the pressure passing kind of style, right? It's that's where I'm talking about the smashing coming in, because you roll with Cloud Genia and you're just like, get out, stop.
I like, you know, there's like shortening the distance down and then start, you know, coming up.
How did you develop that game? Like, you know, what were the key things that you did to develop that style of passing?
I think I watched, because like I said, I watch a bunch of people and then like I copy their games, because I think Master De La Riva, he does a little bit like this. Bruninho does a lot too, so I think I started like watching them and like trying to copy, you know, like because he does this a lot where like he takes care of one leg and then he starts coming up. So he does this a lot, like where he traps the guard, the leg in the half guard, and then he keeps climbing on top. So I think it was like mostly like by watching, because I've been doing this since forever, so I'm not really sure how I started, but probably by like watching other people.
Did you feel it's almost like a safer way to pass the guard as well? You know, maybe not giving up opportunities for the person to sweep or to take stuff?
Yeah, because when you stand up, especially nowadays, you have the warm guard, you have like the De La Riva guard, there's so many ways they can wrap your legs around, so like it is like, I'm gonna stay here on my knees.
Do you find people come after you when you're rolling with them, either you're doing a seminar series or just like dropping in somewhere, they know you're a world champ, do they come after
trying to claim their
gold
medal?
Exactly.
Yeah, this happens a lot, but like I started, you know, like denying a bunch of training, especially because my shoulder is injured. So like when I see people that come up to me like
just itching,
do you want to train? I'm like, no, not with you. But
it's,
yeah,
that's tough though, right? It's tough to say no sometimes.
No, not anymore. Like I learned
not anymore.
I learned that it's important, especially being a girl, and I say that to all the girls when I go to the seminar, is like, you gotta say no. Because it's like, it's your coach's job to make sure that everything is in place, but a lot of men, they don't really understand the difference in strength between because we girls understand because the guys are so strong, but like the guys, I don't think they really understand what's going on. So sometimes you have like a 100-kilo guy putting his whole weight on a 50-kilo girl, is like, just hip out, it's so easy. Just it's like, and the girl's like being smashed, like, how do I hip out of here? You're huge. I don't feel like they understand that a lot. And like De La Riva, I don't think he understands that very well, because when he matches the training, I'm like, oh my god.
Sometimes you make you roll with some big guys.
Yeah, but not just me, like even like, because we have more girls now, but I see sometimes he putting like the tiny blue belt girls against the white belt guys, like, no, don't.
If they die, they die.
Yeah, because it's not that they're mean, it's just that they don't know any better. Like, because when you just started jiu-jitsu, you don't know what you're doing. So, like, how?
You're trying to win.
So,
like,
yeah, so how can you measure how much strength? So, it's not, they don't know. So it happens a lot. Like, a lot of girls come up to me like, what should I do? Like, well, first of all, you got to tell your coach. Like, hey, coach, I can't train with this guy because, you know, he's a little bit too much for me, maybe in a couple of years. But, like, for now, I can't. You know, like, he's smashed. I'm afraid I might hurt myself. And if your coach doesn't do anything about it, well, that's a bad sign. You should maybe, like, look for another location, because your coach should be the guy looking out for you. You should be the guy who's, like, you know, wants you safe. But, like, you got to be able, like, you tell your coach, or sometimes, like, you can tell the guy, like, even you don't need to be mean, like, oh no, I don't want to train with you, you're awful. Like, you can say, like, yeah, I'm a little bit injured today, so, like, I don't want to, you know, do that. Because sometimes, like, a lot of people come and ask me for roles, so, like, hey, I'm very injured, I'm not going hard, so if you're expecting, like, some kind of training, like, I'm not going to be able to give you that much. And then, like, sometimes it goes well, sometimes they start going crazy, and I just stop, like, hey, I'm not going to do, like, respectfully, like, hey, I'm not going to do that anymore because I don't think you understand, you know, what kind of injury
so
I have.
It seems like great advice. It really is.
Yeah, like, I think.
Because I think not that many people really are, like, so open about that, right?
Yeah, because...
And not just women, actually. I'm thinking myself, like, yeah, say no's not a bad thing.
It's
right?
Kind of a taboo thing, right?
Yeah,
say no.
Because people are like, it's no, important. I'm tough.
They're
like,
yeah.
Can you say no? I would never say no. Like, in my time, I wouldn't say... Yeah, there's a lot about, like, this, oh, you can't say no thing. But, like, a lot of people are not athletes. And even if you are an athlete, especially if you are an athlete, that's what you do, so you can't hurt yourself. Mm. But if you're doing that just for fun, like... Why would you hurt yourself? Like, why would you put yourself in that position? So I think, like, it's important to say no. And a lot of people, they have this, like, oh, I can't say no because they're going to think I'm weak. Or, you know, the girls, because it is a male-dominant sport. So there is, like, that, like, oh, girls shouldn't be here. Oh, girls are weak.
Do you really feel that? You've experienced that?
Me personally, no, but I hear a lot of stories because, you know, on the Instagram, they have a lot of Instagrams just for girls, you know, they have, like, ladies BJJ. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, like, they open up, like, for stories, like, and a lot of girls, they say just, like, oh, I roll with everybody, like, they say this and this. So, like, a lot of girls, they want to prove they're tough, and they want to, but that's how you injure yourself, and then you can't train for 6 months.
But what you were saying there about, like, the sexism that exists in jiu-jitsu, do you really think that's a problem? Like, do you think that there are some guys out there who really think that women shouldn't be in the academy, or that they refuse to train with them?
I've heard some cases. So, for example, this one time, it wasn't really sexism. It was just this guy, like, he wouldn't train your girls because his wife wouldn't let him.
she would get jealous?
Yeah, no, she wasn't even there. He was like, my wife asked me not to train with any girls, so I'm not training with any girls. Which I kind of get, because, like, relationships are so hard, and especially if the woman doesn't train, she doesn't really understand. So, like, I kind of get it. Like, you don't want to train, don't train. But
sounds like she doesn't really understand what jiu-jitsu is, though.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Well, but, like, what I hear happening the most is, like, the guy, like, oh, I'm going to rest this round. Do you want to go? And then they train the girl, like, for resting.
Right.
So I see this happen, which I think is disrespectful. But one thing that happens a lot is that the girls, they misunderstand the, like, taking care of your opponent or of your, you know, friend for the disrespect. Because, I was saying about this this thing where, like, the female jiu-jitsu pages on Instagram, like, so they were telling stories. So a lot of girls, like, they got really mad of, like, the guy say, oh, I'm going to go easy on you because you're a girl. Mm. And there's, like, levels to that. Because if the guy doesn't want to hurt you, that's the right... That's the right conduct. Yeah, that's what they should do. They should be careful not to hurt you. But then, like... Oh, I'm gonna arrest this one, so I'm going to the girl. So that's disrespectful. There's, like, a very, you know, thin line between being disrespectful and, like, just watching out for your friend. But, like,
yeah, because if there's a difference of, like, say 20, 25 kilos, you know, like, that's like 50 pounds or whatever between the two people, then you're not, like, disrespecting them by not using your full strength, right?
Yeah, but I think it's also, like, about the way you say stuff. Like, I don't know, don't worry, I'm going to go easy on you. Like, like, all the levels of, but, like, if the coach says, like, hey, go easy on her because she's a girl. Like, I think that's, like, he's just watching out for, you know, the girl's safety and stuff. So there's, like,
some people, levels. They call that a microaggression.
Yeah. Micro.
Oh, no. Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
But it's an interesting topic, though, right? It's like the I think what you're saying there about like the kind of the interaction between men and women in the academy and the way they train together. Like,
yeah.
Have you ever had any problems with personally with that? Have guys been, you know, like too rough on you? Or
yeah.
Really?
Especially when I...
They don't get talked about too often.
Here, yeah.
Like. Yeah.
When I just started training, because I was like, I was tough. I never said no. Right. I trained with everybody. So like there was
it's
some...
It's true. I saw it.
So there was some guys, they were really, really tough. And like there was this one, he was a little bit crazy. He even left afterward, like actually crazy. And every time he would train with me, like he would try and like choke, but he would like punch me in the face. And like this one time, like he left my whole like face like red from like trying to. And at that time, I was always crying. I was like, they hurt me. I was always like, and
that doesn't sound healthy or funny though. I mean, you're laughing, but that doesn't sound cool. Like,
yeah. So like, it happens like. It happened in the beginning, like, where people were, like, too rough. And I don't think they were being mean. I just don't think they really understood the difference of what...
What belt level was this guy?
I think at the time I was a blue belt. He maybe was a purple belt.
So you probably expect somebody of a purple belt or above to be able to have that control, right?
Yeah. But I see, like... happening a lot in the gym, like sometimes the girls, like, they complain to me like, oh, this guy's like crazy, because like they just want a submission, and I don't think they understand the difference in like his strength. So like it did happen a little bit with me, like in the past, but nowadays it's just like, hey, I'm not doing this, like I'm not
it sounds like the easiest way to go about it, right? So, like, just be smart.
If I see people training like crazy and then they come up to me like, do you want to train? I'm like, no. So, but it did happen a few times. So I like, not serious injuries, but it got like a little bit hurt because like guys were going like a bit crazy. But whenever like I see something happening, like I go and like I tap on the guy's shoulder, because I saw it happening at the gym. Like, hey, you don't have to submit her five times. It's fine. Like, it's she's a tiny girl. It's you don't have to. But yeah, like I had that happen with me, but. Again, not that I think they're mean, I just don't think they know, you know, like, they don't really understand, like, the best way to...
I think it's good that, like, you're steadfast in no, and you don't feel bad about saying
no.
No,
I don't feel bad anymore. Yeah.
You should be the one deciding who you train with, right?
Yeah, so I think that's something important. Like, you should be able to tell people no, because... I've seen like some gyms where like, oh, you don't get to say no if a higher belt asks you to row.
It's like the rule, right?
Yeah,
you can't refuse. Yeah,
there's definitely pressure for sure.
Yeah,
you don't get to say no. I think you should be able to tell no, because it's important. Like, it's your health.
I had to learn how to say no as well, and it's weird because you see some people like, you know, I'm like 40 years old, and you know I have injuries.
Wait,
and stuff.
What did you say? Say
a little louder. No, but you know, I'm not in really good shape. I have injuries. You know, I don't train that much or that consistently. But I'm a black belt, and guys see that, and they're like, I'm gonna try and get this guy, because if I beat the black belt, that means I'm good, right?
Yeah, I've had people asking me that in the past, like, if I beat a black belt, am I a black belt? It's like, that's not how this works. It's the same thing.
But it sucks, because if I see, like, that guy is going super hard, like, you know, in a couple of rounds, and then... I'm kind of tired, and he starts walking my way, and you can see him kind of like, all right, it's time to go after that guy. And he's like, hey, you want to roll? And I'll be like, no, I'm okay, thanks. And the look on their face is like, wait, what?
My plan is ruined.
But it's almost like you see like a kind of a malfunction.
It's not today. I don't get to be a black man today.
But they're confused, and sometimes they're a little bit offended. It's like, whoa, why wouldn't you want to train with me? And it's like, It's on me, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, you just got to learn how to say no and just be cool with that, right?
Yeah, because... and I feel like gyms, that they have this kind of environment, like, oh, you can't say no. That's not, you know, healthy. Like, especially, like, either a girl or a smaller guy or, like, an older guy. Like, it's like you're paying to be there. You're paying to train. So, like, why can't you decide what you're going to do?
True.
We got some cool questions coming in actually from the live stream. You want to speak to some of the fans' questions?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So
tell me about our fans.
The first one is from Rick Trudeau, and he says, "Do you have any advice for young teenage girls?" There are a lot of like people coming through from the kids' classes, and a lot of younger people getting involved in sport. So, what kind of advice would you pass on?
So the one I just said about, like, you know, being able to know your body, like say no when you have to say no, like train hard but like train smart. So like if you have that person you're more comfortable training with, like you can train with that person. Not just for the teenage girls, but everybody. Like, don't be afraid to lose in training. Like, nobody is like keeping score. Kind of are, but like don't be like, you know, trapped on that. Like, just you know, take care of your body, your health. Like, you're still young, you're gonna recover pretty well, but still, like, if you can grow up with no injuries, it's better. Like,
because you'll get them later.
Yeah,
they always come.
Everybody gets them, but try and wait as long as
possible.
Put
them off while you can.
Yeah, so like,
do you get to teach a lot of teenage girls in your seminars?
Yeah, not a lot, but like there's a bunch of girls that they come and like they always like have, oh, I've been watching you, like I saw you, like I really like, you know, like seeing that, you know, like being able to be an example, like for, it's like, oh my god, I gotta be a better person because they're watching me. But yeah, so like you just gotta, you know, you gotta have an open relationship with your coach, or like you can tell them what's going on. Like, not like, oh, in school this happened, like, but like the things that are happening on the mats, like you gotta be able to, like, hey, like I'm not doing well with this technique, or like this person is like is training too rough, like they're, you know, being mean to me or whatever. Like, have a good relationship with the coach, train hard, but always like understand your limits. Like, don't try and train with the 200 kilo guy. That's gonna
not worth it.
Probably hurt you.
Do you we got another good question here from Liana Isabella. What's your advice for not giving up? Because we all go through jiu-jitsu, we hit like some really rough patches, whether it's an injury or whether it's like just a period where our jiu-jitsu doesn't feel very good. But we all hit like those obstacles in jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah, this one is tough because like everybody goes through that. Like, I have some, you know, like times in my life that I'm like, guys, I don't really feel like training. Like, I don't. But I feel like that they come and go. So, because a lot of people say, like, even if you don't feel like training, go train. But me, like, I think, like, if you don't feel like training and you go, you're going to end up hurting yourself. So, I feel like if you're not really sure about training, like, you go there and you're like, okay, I'm doing this. Like, you got to put, like, 100% of yourself there. Because if you don't, if you're training, like, there's a big chance you might, you know, like, end up hurting yourself. You could like just do the drilling, because in the drilling there's like last chance that you might. I've never heard of somebody like getting hurt during drilling, but
right,
probably happens to at least one person. But I don't really have like a big advice on this like not giving up part. It's mostly like understanding that your evolution, it's not gonna be like always like this. Sometimes you're gonna go this, some days it's gonna be bad, some days like it's even worse than like a while ago. But then like you gotta understand that you're evolving, even though like you might not see it yourself, but people on the outside, they see. So like you just gotta understand that it takes a while, like you gotta be patient. But like those spirits, they're gonna come and go. Like, oh, I don't feel that good, I don't really want to train. Like, if injuries come, you gotta take care of them. Like, you gotta.
Yeah, progress is never always.
It's a long journey.
It's not always like, oh, I did this today, so tomorrow I'm. Because some days you're not feeling that great, and it's not always going.
You know, I don't know about you guys, but what I really hate is like those bad days when I go in and the techniques that I know and that I do really well just aren't working for me. Those are like the hardest days to deal with.
never.
Mr. Perfect right here. But no, for real though, is you go in and you just, you know, you're not feeling yourself for whatever reason, like you say, it's not a good day, and you go in and it's like, man, like I can't even get the stuff that I know to work? How can I do the new stuff that I'm trying to learn as well? It's really tough.
Yeah, right? A bunch of times, like, I left training crying, like, because it happens. Like, some days you're in a bad day, and, like, you could do a bunch of stuff, and, like, you can't do it anymore. Another thing that's important, like, you gotta understand that you're training, but everybody else is training too. So, like, they're gonna get better too. So, like, in the past, let's say you could, you know, like, you trained with that person, like, training was, like, you would win most of the time, but then, like, they started, like, winning too. Like, you gotta understand that everybody's training.
Yeah, because, like, you don't all get better, like, the same rate, right?
It's so. Not like, oh, I'm training 5 days, he's also training 5 days, so we're going like this. So maybe, like, they get... So you gotta understand that people are getting better too. So it's something to, you know, understand, because I know this, like, sometimes you get, like, a bit frustrated, like, oh, I could do this thing with this person, but, and obviously, like, training a long time with the same person, they start knowing what you do, so it's not like that, oh, you're not good anymore, it's that the people know, like, you've trained together with the same person, so they know your game, so, like, you can try training, like, you know, with different people, like, and always, like, evolving, but it's not always gonna be here, it's, some days are gonna be really bad.
That's it's that. Very true. Yes. About jiu-jitsu, some days it's gonna be bad. Yeah. How do you manage those nerves that we were talking about earlier? You said that you get nervous for every competition you mm-hmm. go to, so even after 4 years, you know, of competing now at, like, the biggest tournaments in the world, how do you deal with it when you get there and you're about to step on the mat?
I don't know.
Still working on it, yeah.
I'm still working on it. The one thing, though, like, I don't like standing because my back hurts. So for any kind of situation, I don't like standing up. But I used, like, to be, like, even, like, until the last second of my match, I was always, like, sitting down. But now I started doing this because, like, a lot of people warm up because, like, you kind of get... you know, like, the nerves out. Mm-hmm. But now I try at least, like, 10 minutes before my match to, like, stand up. Like, sometimes I walk around, like, back and forth like a caged animal. But
like Leandro.
Very relaxed, yes.
You ever seen Leandro before he competes? He's so funny because, like, 10
like
minutes
swaggers around, like.
Yeah, like 5-10 minutes before his match, he's just sat there chilling out, drinking a Coca-Cola, you know, usual Leandro stuff. And then, like, just before his match is kind of up, like the 5-10 minutes, he gets up and he has the strut, right? The Leandro strut. And he does that thing where he's like, he walks and he kind of, like, turns and then he kind of walks down.
Got the catwalk going. Yeah.
And it's amazing. But it's getting that energy out, like you say.
Yeah,
right?
You got to get the energy out. Otherwise, like, the heart is just, like, trying to leave through your mouth. Yeah, but, like, I try and stand up, like, walk a little bit back and forth. But it's still, like, because they're always going to be there. Like, if you don't feel nervous before a tournament, because you're dead.
Yeah, right?
Something's wrong, right?
So they're always going to be there. And I hear that meditation helps out a lot. I was never able to do that. I was never able, like, to concentrate. Was like, but, yeah, if you're able to meditate, like, that helps out a lot. I hear that yoga helps out a lot. And it's all... about the breathing a lot. I hear, like, the breathing correctly helps you out. So, like,
have you tried any of this?
Sometimes I try to.
Just reminding yourself, like, I gotta breathe. Like,
yeah, no, I'm still, like, always nervous. But, like, I feel like I've been trying, like, a bunch of stuff. Like, just, like, you know, like, changing the way I think about stuff. But it's still in the process of, like, still going there.
What happens when you're in the match, though? Like, that moment that you're waiting is probably terrible, right? You feel all the nerves. But when you actually go onto the mat and you slap hands and you go... Are you still nervous, or
still
is it...
nervous. Like, to really? The point where, like I'm holding the gi, like, and, like, my arms start to get stiff, you know, because, like, you're still, like, I don't have my full strength. I'm still, like, nervous. And so that's something that worries me a lot, because sometimes...
Does it take a little while, like, during that match that you feel that goes away? And
sometimes it's there through the whole match.
Wow.
A lot of times, like, you know, I have one match and I'm tired as if I just had 10 full matches. So that's something that worries me a little bit, where, like, I don't get to put 100% of me in there because I'm still, like... So that's something, like, I'm a little bit worried about, like, not being able to perform, you know, 100%, because I'm still, like, so so nervous.
Do you find, like, after a couple of matches in one day that maybe you start getting better?
So, like, I have a match. After the match is over, like, I'm okay. But then as the next match is about to start, it starts coming back
and
again.
How about, like, the world final? Is that more stressful than just, like, a regular match?
Worlds is always world, so it's so much pressure. But I felt that I actually, like, got you, like, it wasn't like the what I was feeling was, like, awful, like, hated it. But as I walked in the mat, like, I felt it wasn't so bad.
It was a relief to, like, finally compete.
Be there.
Yeah, but, like, I was still, like, you know, like, a little bit, like, nervous. I still, like, you know, tired from the adrenaline, but it wasn't as bad as, like, it could have been. But it's still good. Like, yeah, I remember,
like, a lot to deal with. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this time, like, at in my final, like, because I was, like, in the main bullpen area, and, like, I couldn't see Venla. I was like, I hope she didn't come. And then, like, because they also have, like, the Mets, the under the stands.
Oh yeah, there's like
the on deck.
Yeah,
there's one on each
side. And I was
side,
like, let
right?
me see if
yeah.
she's there. I looked, like, oh, she's there. Okay, I'm fighting. I'm fighting. Oh, it's okay. It's fine. I'm fighting. And then, like, I was there, like, sitting down a little bit. And then the second I saw her walking in, like, heart started getting, like, really, really, really nervous. Like, I stand up, like, I was, like, going, and then as we were walking, like, because, you know, on the worlds they have, like, the mat happening, and they have, like, the small areas for the mm-hmm. competitors. And then right as I was walking there, the match that was happening before mine was over super quickly. I was like, ooh, okay, this is gonna happen soon,
time to go.
Ooh. And then, like, I started, like, walking back and forth from one side to the other, and then, like,
what about when you're competing, do you hear anything? Like, you know, some people who compete, they say that they don't really, they hear anything, or they're not really aware of what's going on. Can you hear your coach? Can you hear the crowd?
Most of the time, yeah, I can hear my coach, but I don't usually do it. I like having people as a coach for, you know, like, for support, you know, for, like, emotional support.
Like, you're doing great.
Yeah, so, like, no, just having them there. Because
right.
I remember, like, my finals last year, so Muhammad had just fought Nicholas, and I saw that he was coaching a bunch of people, and then I came up to him and was like, hey, can you be my coach? And then he was like, yeah, okay, like, I'm just going out for like, I'm going to grab some food, and then, like, I'll come back. And then I was walking there, like, he still hadn't arrived, then I saw him on, like, coming out the bleacher. I was like, and then he went there, he sat on my couch. I don't remember if he said anything, but I couldn't hear a word. Like, just having somebody there, like,
makes you feel better.
It makes me feel much better, because, like, my first Worlds 2017, I think I was the only black belt without, you know, a person
wow.
sitting on the corner. And, like, having somebody there really, like, it's just like for moral support. So, like, just having him there, like, made me feel so much better.
Can we just say what a great guy Muhammad is
yes.
for doing that?
Muhammad's right?
Yeah, yeah, and he was about to fight Leandro, and then
yeah.
he still did it. And then
maybe that helped his nerves, though. He got
yeah,
to, he got
yeah.
to think about something else for a minute.
And,
like,
he was coaching a bunch of people this year as well, before
yeah.
he fought Marigali in the final. He's,
yeah, he was coaching. Because you remember him visiting us at De La Hiva.
Actually, this is interesting, because you spoke to Muhammad not too long ago,
right,
and,
yeah,
and you did the interview.
Week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was telling you about that, like, early stage in his career. I think he's a blue belt, right?
Yeah, so mm-hmm. he told me that he was training at Team Noguera doing the MMA
yeah.
thing, and then Minotauro suggested that he focus on jiu-jitsu because he was so young. He was, like, in his late teens.
Yeah.
And so he came to De La Hiva's.
Already a monster by that time.
Oh, yeah, he was huge.
And he mentioned that's when he met you at, you guys were both blue belts. What was it like yeah. training with him as a blue belt? Was he, like, an MMA guy, kind of going crazy strong?
No, he's always been super chill. He's mm. always, like, it was always great training with him. And he used to joke around, like, oh, you defend pretty well, I can't choke you. But obviously he wasn't trying that hard. But, like, it's always been, like, super great training with him. Like, he would visit us. He was already a monster back then. And so, like, we developed this friendship for, like, a long time. And then, like, I remember Worlds, I think 2014. I was here in the U.S. I didn't compete, but, like, I saw him, like, I talked to him, and I think he won double gold that year at Purple Belt. Mm. Double gold. And like, so we had this relationship, this friendship for a very long time. And then like at Worlds, like I was freaking out. I didn't have anybody. So like I went there and asked him, and it was amazing that he did that. And like right after that, he fought Leandro, and then he won his first Worlds, which like I got so happy.
It's
for.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny actually. You mentioned like I never met Muhammad at the gym. Like, I think because he trained in the early classes.
Yeah, the 7 a.m. training.
You will not find me in those classes. 4 p.m. class, that was mine. That was the one I used to go to. But it's kind of interesting, actually. I wanted to ask you this. Is that I remember when you were at De La Riva's, you would train, like, every class I would go, you would be there. Whether it was, like, 7 a.m., whether it was 4 p.m. or 6 p.m., it seems like you were always in there on the mat. And you used to live, like, right across the street, right?
Yeah, I still live there. But the La Riva, they just switched it. You know, they moved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't see them move because I was here already. Mm. But they moved. But, yeah, I live right across from the gym.
You haven't been to the new gym yet?
No, not yet, because they moved out. I was here already.
Right. So you were training a lot, like hours every day you were in the gym and on the mat. But with the traveling that you're doing, with the teaching that you're doing, the competing you're doing, how much do you train now?
Not enough. Because so I try and train at least once a day, but because sometimes like I'll have you know, a class every day, you know, to teach, and especially like with traveling, because like you gotta wake up to take for a flight, like you don't really get to choose well what time is your flight, because flights are crazy. Like even coming here to Austin, my flight was 6 a.m. Mm. So like you don't really get to choose your flight. You got to see like what options they have,
and that's like the day gone because you spent it traveling.
Yeah,
right, so
you
that's your training
traveling.
Gone like yeah,
yeah. And with you know, international flight, like sometimes yeah, you lose a whole day, so I don't get to train as much now. But I try to do that at least like once a day, but definitely not like I used to train. I was on the gym the whole day.
Did you ever experience overtraining? A lot of people say that that was a problem for them. What was that like?
Yeah, but that was still when I didn't do jiu-jitsu yet. I was in judo, and it was a period like I think it was on... Because before I did engineering, I went to acting school.
Okay.
Nice. So it was a time...
That explains a lot.
No, this is me. This has always been me. It's not from that. So, and then they it was like a vacation, like a time. But then, and then like I was waking up because the gym would open at 6 a.m. So I was waking up, going to the gym at 6 a.m., doing the whole class, you know, like the they have like the spinning class, mm-hmm. like the jumping class. I was doing all the classes. I was working out and then going and training judo at night. And then, like, obviously it didn't went well. So I did experience some overtraining at that time. But when I was training jiu-jitsu, not really, because, like, when I felt I was, you know, too tired, I would just, like, chill and, like,
So you learned to listen to your body, though.
Yeah, yeah, like... I learned, like, sometimes you have to chill. You can't be training like crazy.
With age comes wisdom, right?
Yes. What age?
What are the plans? What have you got coming up next? What are you doing right now, and what's on the horizon?
So I have Master Worlds, and by the end of August, I love the tournament. It's so much fun.
It is a good one, right? We love Masters Worlds. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
It's less serious than like the World Championships,
right? Yeah, the
right?
Worlds, yeah. One time Lovato did a video like the difference between Worlds.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that's great.
And it was funny, like the Worlds, you're like, and like you win by advantage, you're like, ah!
Masters Worlds, they just like give the guy a big hug. It's like a celebration of jiu-jitsu. It's good
yeah,
fun.
It's very fun. And like, Vegas is so much fun. Like you walk around looking like all this stuff. Like I can't believe this is real. Like it's yeah, it's super fun. So I have that, and like for the future, like I want to have my own gym at some point. Just like trying to figure out like location and everything, because I know, you know, it's so much to think about, because like being an athlete translates nothing into owning a business. So
right. Nobody learns how to run a business when you're training jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah. So
that's something you need to learn. In addition to
that's
your
jiu-jitsu. That's a whole other thing that I need to learn and study. And so, but I would love like to have my own gym, because I can't be traveling forever, you know. So at some point, like I want to chill, having my own gym, like opening up my own business and stuff.
Does that mean that you would stop competing, though?
No, I don't think so. I know that when you just open a gym, you kind of like, you need like at least 6 months so you can establish yourself, so like you can find people that can cover for you when you travel, like people you trust, obviously. So I know it takes like a little bit of your time, because I know people, they have gyms and they still travel. Like you can still travel when you have a gym, but you first got to establish some stuff first. But no, I want to be competing. I don't know how long I'll be doing like worlds, but like stuff like Master Worlds and like even some of the Opens, like I think I'll be like competing for a while.
Very cool. All right. Well, guys, I think it's probably time to wrap this up. Thanks so much for coming in, Cloud Chair. It's really fun.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, awesome. And we've got plenty more stuff to do while you're here in Austin. We're going to shoot some techniques tomorrow. Yeah. And we're going to do some match breakdowns and some other fun stuff. So should be pretty cool. And just don't forget, guys, you can check all of
follow
that out.
Follow me so my dad...
Don't forget to follow.
Let's get this woman some more followers. Come on, right? So... All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Fistful of Collars. Claudia, thank you so much for coming
in.
It's been an absolute
me.
Pleasure. And we'll see you guys again on the next one.